Chapter 10. Lionel's arms were sore by the time he reached Jamar's block. The last of the daylight had died away as he crept through the broken gate, dropped his clothes on the step, and knocked on the door. Overhead, a police helicopter chopped at the sky.
"What up, Al?"
Jamar said, beaming at him as he opened the door.
"You finally made up your mind?"
Lionel immediately smelled the pungent odor of marijuana, and he could see that Jamar's eyes were pink and bloodshot. The scent made him pause at the doorway. For half a second, he felt as if he was on the court, looking for his options. Pass, dribble, shoot. But now Lionel knew he had no other choices. Jamar's place was his only move. "Yeah," Lionel said, stepping inside, feeling the smoky air spill over him.
"Cool,"
Jamar said, slapping his hand.
"Put your stuff in the room and make yourself at home. It's your crib now."
"Thanks," Lionel said, scanning the cluttered living room. Everything was the same as Lionel remembered it, except that a ripped brown recliner was now next to the sagging green couch. And several cases of beer were stacked next to a cooler in the far corner of the room.
"You picked a good night to come over," Jamar said, glancing over at the alcohol. "My cousin's having a bunch of his friends over. Should be here soon."
Lionel felt uneasy as he carried his bag into the messy bedroom. The air inside was thick and close, smelling like a soupy mixture of marijuana smoke, old tires, and the wax they use at the car wash. Jamar quickly kicked all his things aside, clearing half the floor for Lionel.
"You want a hit?"
he said, offering Lionel what looked like a half-smoked cigar.
"You look like you could use it."
"No thanks, Jamar," Lionel said, squirming inside. Even though he was free of his father, he couldn't just let go of the rules he lived by for so long. He'd always been clean, an athlete for the police athletic league, the son of two parents who warned him about drugs and alcohol. And yet now, he felt smoke seeping onto his clothes, coating his hair and skin, sinking into his lungs.
"So why'd you decide to move in?" Jamar asked. "I thought Felix scared you."
"I quit school today," Lionel admitted. "They wouldn't let me join the basketball team, so why should I stay there?"
"That's what I was trying to tell you," Jamar said with an approving nod. "Let me guess, you was failing, right?"
The question made Lionel wince. He couldn't deny the truth, he was failing. There was no sense in keeping secrets, but somehow telling Jamar bothered him. It was like admitting defeat and accepting what he'd fought against for so long that he was too stupid for school.
"Yeah, so what?"
he replied finally, hating the words as they dropped off his tongue.
"You just like me,"
Jamar said, glancing over at the old picture of his mother at his bedside.
"After my mom got sick, I had no time for school. My teacher started failing me, so I quit."
"What happened to her?" Lionel couldn't stop himself from asking.
"I told you, she got sick,"
Jamar said, fiddling with a pack of matches.
"She always talked about liking school too, but it didn't help her."
Lionel unpacked his clothes, pretending not to hear the sadness in Jamar's voice, even as it spread into the cramped bedroom like more smoke. Just then, Lionel heard car doors slam shut outside. A second later, the front door opened and laughter poured into the hallway.
"Sounds like Andre and his friends are here," Jamar said. "Come on."
Lionel felt a wave of dizziness as he walked with Jamar back to the living room. Suddenly, a hip-hop beat cracked and pulsed through the small house. Maybe it was the smoke and the noise or his own weariness from tryouts, but Lionel felt his own head getting hazy. He wobbled slightly as he followed Jamar into the living room. Andre and four other people he'd never met before stood around the cooler. Two of them were girls. All of them seemed to be a few years older than Jamar, who was 17.
"Check it out, Andre. Lionel's gonna live with us,"
Jamar explained. "You got rent money?" Andre asked as three more people came in the front door.
"Yeah, he's cool, right, Lionel?"
Lionel nodded as Jamar handed him a bottle of beer.
"No thanks,"
Lionel said.
"Come on, man, you're free now,"
Jamar urged.
"You ain't gotta worry. No one's gonna go telling your dad or anything."
Lionel took the cold bottle in his hand as the music continued to pound in his head. On the couch at the far side of the room, Lionel saw two people light up a joint.
Nearby, Andre and a friend gulped beer and talked with the girls who laughed loudly. One of them wore a snug jean skirt and stumbled into Andre as she talked.
"That's Aisha, Andre's girlfriend. She's drunk already, as usual," laughed Jamar.
The dizziness in Lionel's head was spreading. His hands tingled, and his feet felt strangely unsteady. Smoke tickled the back of his throat, making him cough every few minutes. Reluctantly, he took a gulp of beer to help. At first, the taste was horrible, and he nearly gagged. But with the music pumping, the growing haze in his brain, and the thirst and itch of his throat, it gradually bothered him less.
"I shouldn't be doing this," he said flatly at one point, looking at the bottle in his hand, feeling the smoke sting his eyes.
He was sitting in a corner of the living room, watching everyone else laugh and talk around him.
"Man, you get used to it," Jamar answered. "Helps you stop thinking, you know."
Soon Jamar was handing him a second beer and then a third as the smoke and music mixed and swirled in the air. Already his anger at Bluford and Dad had lost its edge. School was a fading memory slipping behind him forever, dissolving in the mind-numbing haze. Even Malika's pretty face seemed foggy when he pictured it, along with Dontrell and everyone else at Bluford. He almost couldn't feel the sadness of leaving them all behind, of dropping out of their world, a world that was once his. Lionel had lost count of how much he'd drunk when he realized Jamar was gone. Nearby, a few people were dancing. Their moving bodies made Lionel's dizziness worsen, so he decided to go to his room to escape. But several people were in the bedroom sitting on the mattress talking quietly with Jamar.
"Hey, there's my new roommate."
But Lionel turned away at the blast of smoke that hit him. He rushed back to the living room where Aisha danced into him, nearly falling over. Lionel caught her and held her up, and she looked at him, her eyes glassy, her hands on his shoulders.
"Sorry," she said with a drunken smile.
Then someone started yelling.
"Are you touching my girl?"
The voice was vaguely familiar, but it seemed far away and foggy, aimed at someone else, Lionel thought. And then Andre was in his face, screaming at him. Lionel was in a cloud of his breath and spit.
"I'm gonna beat you down right here if you touch her again, you hear me?"
"It's cool, I was just helping her," Lionel explained, putting his hands up, but the room was spinning now, and a sour taste began to gather in his mouth. Lost in the haze and smoke and music, Lionel staggered to the bathroom as his stomach began to heave, blurred and groggy. Lionel stumbled to the toilet as beer-tinged vomit began spilling golden and sour down his shirt and splashing onto the back of the toilet. He heard the scream of girls and the cackle of laughter as someone opened the door on him.
"That boy is a lightweight." "Ew, that's nasty."
"Gross." Lionel slammed the door shut and fell to his hands and knees, hunched over the toilet. Staring down at his reflection in the fluids from his stomach, Lionel saw himself for what he was. Stupid. Failure. Dropout. The words erupted from deep inside, mocking him. He hated what he saw, but he knew it was his fault. He'd made himself into the mess that returned his gaze. Strangely, then, the words of Langston Hughes's poem came back to him like the voice from a distant past. "What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat? Or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode?" For the first time, Lionel knew the answers to the questions in the poem. A dream does all those things if it isn't lived, he realized. It dries up, rots, stinks, explodes. But it does something else too. It dies. Looking at his reflection in the stinking fluid, Lionel knew he couldn't stay with Jamar. If he did, he would end up just like him, working at a meaningless job, pretending to be happy as he numbed himself each day. There would be no school, but there'd also be no basketball, no family, no future. Lionel didn't want that. He forced himself off the floor. He knew he had to get out of the house now or he'd never make it. Lionel staggered through the crowd and stumbled to the door, his head pounding in pain, his stomach threatening to retch with each step. His balance still wasn't right, and he tripped through the broken gate, nearly twisting his ankle as he emerged onto the street. After just half a block, Lionel had to vomit again, holding himself against a wall as he spit out the last contents of his stomach,
trying to keep his good shoes clean. His head felt as if someone was trying to hammer huge nails into his skull. A block further, with his head aching and dizzy, Lionel felt lost. In the haze of smoke and drink, the dark, unfamiliar neighborhood was like a maze, the houses strange and ominous. Was he still on 43rd Street? Was there someone he could ask for directions? Should he just go back to Jamar's house? What time was it? He had no idea. Just then, Lionel heard a thundering beat coming up the block from behind him. He waited for the car to drive by and the music to fade, but that didn't happen. Instead, it held steady, cracking and thumping the air behind him, but never passing, the words loud and clear. This ain't no game, this is for real. You gonna get hurt, them cuts won't heal. You gonna get stabbed, that blood's gonna spill. You gonna cry out before you get killed. Lionel knew the car was following him then. He knew he couldn't be that far from Jamar's, but he also knew he was too dizzy and sick to run. He thought of Russell and what Miss Walker had said to him. My Russell had his chance taken from him. Don't you waste yours. The music cut off abruptly and Lionel could hear the engine humming, the tires rolling slowly on the asphalt, the squeak of brakes. Yo, where you from? I don't know you, shouted a voice. Lionel kept walking, pretending not to hear. I'm talking to you. Where you going? Lionel peeked to his left and saw the car, a dark blue sedan. Along with the driver, three other guys were inside, all of them watching him. The one yelling at him was in the passenger seat, a reverse bandana on his forehead. Lionel knew he needed to give them an answer. I'm just going home, man, Lionel said. I don't want no trouble. Too late for that. All four car doors opened then, and Lionel watched as the guys surrounded him. His heart pounded in his aching skull. The world spun around him and he could barely stand, let alone run. Please, he said, thinking of Russell. Was this the way he spent his last minutes? Was this how his life ended that afternoon 2 years ago? Crunch. Suddenly fists were punching him and he was on the ground. A kick landed in the ribs, and Lionel gasped for air, the pain shooting into him like a hot knife. Lionel's mind raced to his father. He pictured Dad hearing the news that his son died right there on the sidewalk, like so many other kids in the neighborhood. I'm sorry, Dad, Lionel thought. I never wanted it to end up like this. Lionel felt hands yank from his pocket the money he'd grabbed earlier. Then his expensive Nikes were pulled off as he rolled on the ground in pain. You stupid to walk out here like this, hissed one of the guys standing over him. The world grew hazier, and Lionel heard Reverend Simmons's words echo in his mind. And yet this son is not lost. None of us are. That's when he noticed twin beams of light shining down the street and heard the sound of a truck thundering through the darkness. Then there was a blur of hurried voices, feet scampering, a car racing off, its tires screeching against the asphalt, the grumble of an enormous diesel engine growing closer, the image of his father's face dissolving. Lionel, talk to me. Talk to me, son. Lionel. Lionel felt as if he was falling, the world going cold and dark. Lionel woke up in a strange bed, wincing at the bright morning sun that filled his room with light. He tried to sit up, but his head throbbed and pain ripped into his side, making him groan. Stay still, son. You're in the hospital, a familiar voice said. Your ribs are bruised. He glanced up to see his father sitting at his bedside, his face lined with worry, his eyes tired and bloodshot. How you feeling, hadn't he asked, putting a hand on Lionel's shoulder. Lionel turned away. A wave of guilt swept over him. Dad, I'm sorry. I never meant for this to happen, he replied. He expected his father to be furious and lecture him on everything he'd done wrong, but instead Dad reached over and hugged him. You scared me, Lionel, he said, his voice cracking. Thank God your principal called and your sister knew where you were. I don't know what I'd do if something happened to you. Lionel cringed. Dad's voice made him feel even more dishonest. He needed to tell his father the truth, but the words stuck in his throat. He felt like a blister about to burst. Dad, I got problems, he said finally. I ain't been telling you 'cause I knew you'd get mad, but I don't know what to do.
The words erupted from him then. He described everything that had happened at Bluford, the forged letter, even the events at Jamar's and his decision to quit school.
I messed up, Dad. I'm sorry. I just didn't want you to know. I'm the dumbest kid in my class, he admitted, certain his father would punish him.
You're not dumb, Lionel, Dad snapped. I don't want to ever hear you say that. You're smart, too smart sometimes from what your principal told me today. But you need some extra work on your reading skills.
I know something about that, Dad said.
Huh? I never graduated high school, Dad declared.
Lionel turned so quickly his ribs hurt. You serious?
That's right. I was a little older than you when I got tired of people making fun of me in school, calling me slow or whatever. So one day I quit. It was the biggest mistake of my life. Your mom and I kept it a secret because we didn't want you following in my footsteps. Why else you think I'm always on your case? I don't want you to have to come up like me, working like a dog and needing every cent just to get by. If I had a better job, maybe your mama would be here with us instead of overseas right now, he said bitterly.
Lionel's head was spinning, but Dad kept talking, the most they'd spoken in years.
I'm trying to fix my mistake by getting my GED. I started studying about a month ago so I can get a promotion and be home more for you and your sister. If I pass all my tests, I'll have my high school diploma in about 6 weeks. That's why I've been away so much lately. All because I dropped out.
Lionel heard everything Dad said, but one phrase stuck in his mind. Away so much lately. Ever since he talked to Kendra, Lionel had his own ideas where Dad was each week. Suddenly the question was racing off his tongue.
What about Denise? Lionel blurted. You still got time to see her?
His father winced and shook his head.
I have to see her, Lionel. She's my tutor. One of your mom's army people put us in touch. I see her every Friday. She's been helping me work on my skills, just like you gotta work on yours.
I didn't tell you because I was embarrassed. But after talking with Mrs. Henley and Miss Spencer, I know you needed to hear the truth from me.
Your tutor?
Lionel's jaw dropped as Dad's words sunk in. Part of him was relieved to hear the truth, but another part was angry that he'd hidden it for so long.
You should have told us.
You're right, Lionel, Dad agreed. But I didn't want you to know I was getting help.
You see, you and me, we're the same. Except you got a choice to do things right the first time around, and you're better at basketball than I ever was.
Yeah, well, that don't matter because they won't let me play.
Listen to me. Miss Spencer and I got to talking, Dad explained. She told me about a bunch of programs at Bluford to help with school. You do your work, and you'll get on that basketball team. But you gotta come home and get back in school first, you hear me?
Lionel struggled to grasp what he'd just learned. It was as if the world was shifting somehow. Doors that had been shut against him were now ready to be opened again.
I don't know if I can do it, Dad, Lionel admitted. I ain't never been good at school.
You were never able to dunk before, neither, right? But you can now, Dad said.
Lionel smiled. His dad had a point, one Lionel would cling to in the months ahead. Just then, a nurse stepped into the room and looked at the chart at Lionel's feet.
How are we doing this morning?
She asked, inspecting his bandages and his eyes.
We're good, Lionel said, glancing over at his father and thinking about the events of the past few weeks.
He had been lost. He'd walked a downward spiral and barely escaped. He could feel the scars inside and out, and yet he was still standing.
Bluford High School would still be an enormous challenge. Reading would intimidate him. Kids would tease him. Some might call him stupid or worse. But he had his father on his side, along with a few teachers and an old coach.
Dontrell would have his back. Maybe Malika would too. Perhaps they'd even grow into something more. After everything that happened, Lionel wanted to find out. By some miracle, he'd been given something many people never got, a second shot. He planned to make it count. Several weeks later, on a Saturday morning, two players stepped onto a blacktop near Bluford High School. One was young and fast, explosively quick. The other was older, slower, and more cautious, but with a decent outside shot. They joked and laughed as much as they played, and for the hour they were on the court, people gave them space, recognizing that they were part of the most sacred team of all, family.
This has been a Townsend Press production from the Bluefoot series of books, School, written by Paul Langan and read by Jameel Gaines. This book was produced by Audiobright and features the music of Kenyon Whittington. For more information, visit our website at townsendpress.com.